Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to New Mexico West Prepping on the Contra Radio Network. I'm your host, Brian.
And I'm your co-host, Eric.
Well, it's John Jeffers here. I just got a message from Brian saying they are having technical difficulties with their computer on the other end. So I'll keep you company until Brian and Eric can get in here. I will talk to Brian about the opening theme music. I've talked to him about it before. He doesn't listen to me. So in the meantime, let's see what we got going on here. Waiting for Brian to log in here. New Mexico West Prepping is going to be a show, is what Brian tells me. Now, look, if you know Brian is from, he's been living off-grid. And he's going to go live off-grid again, only this time, instead of being in West Texas, he's going to live off-grid in western New Mexico. Now, Brian has experience living off-grid. He's going to be talking to you about, this whole thing's falling apart on me now. Just bear with us. We'll get it straight. And worst comes to worst, we'll do it again. Let's see. Worst comes to worst, we'll have him do it again tomorrow night. We just are just having a hard time. For some reason tonight, it's just not going the way we want it to go. But as I was saying, before I was really interrupted by this Blog Talk Radio switchboard, what we're going to do is this. Look, he's going to be living off-grid. He's going to be talking about some of the failures that he has experienced while living off-grid. So if you go to live off-grid, you got an idea of what not to do. Now, let me think. What else have we been waiting for Brian to call in? Nope, I can. Okay. What?
You are listening to New Mexico West Prepping on the Contra Radio Network. I'm your host, Brian.
And I'm your co-host, Eric.
You are listening to New Mexico West Prepping on the Contra Radio Network. I'm your host, Brian.
And I'm your co-host, Eric.
All right, today's show is going to be on who we are and why we prep. We'll start off by explaining a little bit about who we are and what got us into prepping. Basically, we're going to explain the tagline first. Our tagline is preparing today to survive the day after tomorrow, which is something that I've always strived to do since the beginning of my prepping time. Albeit I was kind of thrown into it. I started originally prepping in about 2006. In the beginning, it was more of a trial and error thing. And from there, we went to hold on just a second. It seems I have an issue here. I may not be broadcasting. Hold on just a second. Why don't we try and figure this out? It says I am connected. All right, let's try this again. See if we have anything going on. Well, it appears that I do not have any sound. All right, let's try this again. Can you hear me? Anybody? Anybody there? It says you're there. Okay. Well, now that that's fixed, let's try this again. Maybe we'll just clip off the first 10 minutes of the show. All right, so today's episode is going to be on who we are and why we prep. Biggest thing that I can lead back to is about 2006, I started getting into prepping. I didn't really get in wholeheartedly at first, just a little bit here, a little bit there. I spent more time reading and researching and thinking about how awesome it was going to be to go off-grid. And then from there I slowly started buying a little bit of stuff here and a little bit of stuff there, and eventually got to the point where I was starting to actually prep. The economy started to tank in 2008, and I still had almost no prepping stuff squared away. My job, the economy finally caught up with my job in 2013, and long story short, I became unemployed, lost just about everything that I had, and ended up being forced to move into a smaller place after I lost my job and lost my vehicle and lost everything else. So long story short, I was kind of forced into prepping. That was in 2000 and2014, we moved into my camper as we were remodeling it. Slowly found out that all of my preparations and everything that I had done to prep for going off grid was pretty much a failure. So long story short, made a whole lot of mistakes, had a whole lot of stuff that I bought that was pretty much worthless. And the end outcome was a whole lot of headaches. After 2.5 years of being off grid, we moved back into town as we rethought things out and figured out exactly what we were going to do to fix our issues. So, long story short, we're now working on another piece of property in the mountains that's going to be off grid as well. You know, so basically that's me. And Eric is here as well. He's going to explain a little bit about himself. And go ahead, Eric.
What? Can you hear me? I started prepping about the same time that my dad started prepping. I kind of did little bits of stuff. Like, I was just learning how to prep. And I would do little bits of things, like make sure we had everything all stocked up and everything. And that's just about it. I started like totally getting into prepping this year when I started like actually like watching everything and making sure, like, I helped make sure we had a plan and everything on how to get to our property if something happened. I got a map and everything that's marked down on how to get there. Say anything happens, like, if... What? Oh, if the grid goes down, or if, like, say certain points, like say if the United States gets nuked or something like that, certain points get path that goes through all the points to get to our property. And that's just about it.
All right, well, there we go. All right, so a lot of our prepping is nowadays is more of a it's a family thing. It's definitely a family thing. It has to be a family thing. You can't do it on your own. You can't do it solo. You have to be able to work as a team, because there's nobody out there who can actually do it 100% on their own. There's nobody who is capable of doing that. So, you know, if you don't work as a team, you're going to end up failing. So a lot of our prepping now isn't really so much prepping for, like, the end of the world. You know, when you say, you know, preparing today to survive the day after, it's not the day after, you know, the end of the world. It can be the day after unemployment. It can be the day after a tornado, the day after a hurricane, the day after the grid goes down, or the day after the end of the world as we know it. You know, I mean, if you prepare for the basic things and don't worry so much about the things that you really have no control over, when it comes to the bigger things, you'll be prepared. You know, if you prepared to handle, say, a grid down scenario, then you're going to be prepared to handle just about anything that's going to come up. So, you know, it's more of a lifestyle than a you know, a fear mongering thing. It's a you know, go with the flow and take things one day at a time. You know, the ultimate goal for us is to be about 95% self-sufficient by the end of 2017. You know, and by doing that, we're going to be going to solar, rainwater, and well for water, you know, and rainwater for redundant backup. You know, the garden is going to be in place, and it'll be relatively self-sufficient. All right, well, apparently I can be, someone can hear me. That's always a bonus. So, you know, basically the garden will be in place and relatively self-sufficient. It's going to be on irrigation and drip irrigation and timer. So it'll run pretty much by itself. The weeding will have to be done and things like that. But, you know, it's the most important thing is getting things squared away so that the end outcome, which is going to be retirement as far as I'm concerned, can be accomplished. And by doing so, you need to reduce, you know, we need to reduce all of our bills to minimum. And basically, you just get set up so that, you know, so that if we have any, issues, we can take them, we can handle them. So the property is just getting started now. We have a camper there and a house that we're working on building. The solar panels, we have 800 watts in place now, and we're working on installing the parts to for the new setup in the house. And when we're all said and done, we'll have 16 panels, 190 watts, which will handle just about anything we need to handle. That was one of the lessons we learned in our previous off-grid time. And, you know, it was a learning lesson. You know, the most important thing is incorporating the mistakes that we made into our new plan, because there was a lot of mistakes. One of the biggest things is, you know, don't buy the gimmicks. The gimmicks, I mean, they look great on paper. They sound great, but they don't work. You know, there was a lot of money that was wasted on things that just didn't work and didn't really serve a purpose, except for they looked really cool. And, you know, so the, you know, when we were forced to go off grid in 2014, after losing my job and losing everything that I had, it kind of came as a shock, you know, and, it comes to a shock. I'm pretty sure it would come as a shock too, but, it came as a shock to say the least. And, when it was all said and done, we ended up with a undersized power plant, no form of water, no really form of food. We were pretty unprepared, and it was a pretty rude awakening. So, you know, we adapted and we overcame it as a family. And, you know, in the long run, we're going to be better for that. It allows us to incorporate everything into our new property, so that as we go forward, we can, you know, maybe not make quite so many mistakes. That being said, this podcast is going to cover the things we have done in the past, things that I know about, things that we've made mistakes on, so that hopefully other people can't make mistakes or don't make the same mistakes that we made, which were some pretty horrendous mistakes. but we'll get into those in later episodes. This episode is going to be basically a welcome, and just kind of get a little feel as to who myself and my son are, and you know, what we plan on doing. Hopefully over the months that come, everyone will learn a little bit and laugh a little bit, and you know, we'll make progress as we go. As we work on the property up in the mountains, I'll be uploading photographs of that as we go, and then go from there. See, has anyone in the chat room got any questions there? It looks like no. So, yeah. All right, so we covered myself and my son. As you know, let's go over a little bit of what happened on our first off-grid property. We moved into a camper that was in dire need of repairs. We picked it up for really cheap, knowing that it was in dire need of repairs. And we hooked it up out there in the middle of the desert in West Texas. And there was a whole lot of anticipation and things that we had just, you know, we're going to work. This is going to be great. And then when we got out there, it was like, ah. So, you know, moving into a camper from a 3-bedroom house, quite the change. Finding where to stuff everything, quite the change in that we were also trying to renovate said trailer, said camper while we were living in it. So that was kind of exciting. We would move everything out during the day, work on the camper, and then move everything back in at night. until we got that done. It was interesting to say the least. We had a well, community well, about 2.5 miles from our property. So we had water, but I'd never actually had the water tested or any of that. So I just assumed the water was relatively good. Unfortunately, I found out that it did a lot of things, including not make the plants real happy if you poured it straight onto them. So that was an interesting lesson, to say the least. The progress, the process that we went through was rather dramatic, and as such, it kind of forced you to adapt. And if we didn't adapt, we wouldn't be where we're at today. So the next adaptation was a septic tank, and this one was rather humorous. We didn't have a septic tank, so in Texas, if you have 10 acres, you can put your own septic tank in. So we proceeded to try and put our own septic tank in. I went out and read all about the requirements and the codes and all that stuff that were required for septic tanks, and then proceeded to start digging and stuck our septic tank in. And unfortunately, I didn't comprehend the fact that you have to put water in a septic tank. So, you know, common sense would have told you this, but it didn't come up like that. So, hey, we have a caller here. Let's go ahead and see who we have there. Hello, caller.
Hey, buddy, it's me.
Hey, how you doing? I haven't bombed yet, have I?
No. You know what? The first episode is always the hardest. I'm here to tell you, man.
Yeah, I think we can probably edit out the first 10 minutes of me trying to figure out how come I couldn't hear myself talking.
you never hear yourself talking.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's
It's all new to me. But anyway, so did you have any questions?
You know, you're talking about, you know, what kind of renovations did you do to the camper? How big is the camper? What kind of camper is it? You know, make, model, that kind of thing.
Okay. All right. It was a 28-foot Wanderer. Bunk beds in the back. It's a bunkhouse. It's considered a bunkhouse. Has bunk beds in the
right.
back and a full-size bed in the front.
Okay.
You know, there wasn't any walls, so the full-size bed was – there was like a little half wall between the bedroom and the living room, which my wife wasn't happy with. So we renovated it and put a wall up there and put a door in. It leaked, so we had to seal the roof. And, you know, she moved everything around – took the dining table out and created a custom dining table to fit in the same spot sideways. It's hard to explain, but basically she turned the table sideways so that instead of having two benches, you have one, but it made more room in the living room area. So that was a bonus. And then, I was in the process. I was actually talking about the septic tank that we had put in. So, had you caught that, or did you?
No, we caught it. Got it.
Okay,
that,
so
well,
yeah, so
2 miles from where the hell you were.
Yeah, well, I'll get to the well in a second too. But so I put a septic tank in. It's kind of funny because I put the septic tank in, and I didn't even think about the fact that I should put water in the septic tank. So I tank in, and common sense would have told me, hey, you got to fill it with water because otherwise it's going to float out of the ground. So the first rainstorm, which happened to be about a week later, I go out next morning, and there's my septic tank sitting up on top of the ground. About 200 feet down the hill. So I go down, I grab this up. Fortunately, I hadn't actually dumped anything into it yet. Because, you know, trailers, you fill the black water tank up and then you
right.
empty it once every couple of weeks. So I hadn't actually emptied it yet, which is probably fortunate. Otherwise, I'd have been really upset. So I go out there and roll it back up the hill, dig the hole back out with all the mud, bury it back in the ground, fill it with water this time. Got all my pipes reconnected to it. I go in the house. It's nighttime. It's dark. It's starting to rain again. So I go in the house. I wake up the next morning, and my septic tank is sitting at about a 45-degree angle. I filled it completely with water. So I was like, you know what? So I went out there, and I got in my shed, and I checked to make sure I had some sacreed in there. I went out there. I dug the hole back out again, third time now, buried my septic tank again, filled it back up with water, and stuck, 10 80-pound bags of sacreed on top of it, and it hasn't moved since. So, Now, I've since buried it all the way, and you know, it's completely buried out there. But that's, I sold that property about 2 months ago. A lot of lessons learned there. You know, the the process, the learning process was interesting. You know, it's like the water. We didn't take into consideration that the water didn't have any tests. Hadn't had any tests done on it. So, I mean, they told us that it had a lot of particulates, but, you know, to a city guy, particulates, mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll just filter out the particulates. Well, you know, the particulates come with minerals and vitamins that you don't really want, minerals and chemicals that you don't really want, not vitamins. So, we putting in a whole house filter and reverse osmosis system on the sink so that we could, it's like one of the self-contained RO systems. It's not like a real RO system. They're expensive, but it's like one of the little self-contained ones. It just sets up on your counter and you run a hose through to it. And then you open it up on top and it gives you about a gallon a day of water. So that was what we used for drinking water and then cooking. Of course, you know, the water boils, so you don't have to worry about it so much there. Okay. Quite so bad. But
how long did it take you to do all the renovations?
Took us about 2 months, about two and a half months. I said, we were kind of pressed because, like I said, we got thrown into there and we didn't really have any other choice. We actually moved into my brother and his wife had built a teepee on my property and it was a real nice teepee, two stories inside with a loft upstairs with a king-size bed, full bathroom downstairs, kitchen, living room. It was a big teepee. There's actually a picture. Should be scrolling through the
–
I can't see the – okay. I'm guessing it's scrolling through because I can't see that. So we stayed in there for about 3 months before we bought the camper, and it was all solar as well. My sister-in-law, my brother's wife, had open heart surgery, so they couldn't live out that far. They had to stay closer to town. So it kind of worked out. The Lord provided as far as that goes. I guess that's one way to look at it, right? So we stayed in there for about 3 months and then we bought that camper and then moved into the camper. And
what kind of vehicle are you using to tow it?
I have a 3/4 ton F-250 with a 460 big block gasoline engine. It doesn't have any problems pulling it whatsoever. It's got the heavy duty suspension, the towing package. It's got the fifth wheel hitch from the factory and all that good stuff. So, it's built a little more heavy duty than your average F-250. But any 3/4 ton or 1 ton should pull anything that size. I see people pull them with a half ton. That's just a whole lot of setup for failure right there. The trucks are.
What about going up the hill? What about going up mountainsides with it?
Oh, I didn't have any problems going up hills with that truck, with that trailer.
Oh, really?
When I pulled it up to our new property, we went up a whole lot of hills and down a whole lot of hills, and it did a great job. I never lost speed. I was at speed the whole way up the hills and down the hills. A couple of hills it might have got a little warm on, but you know, those were hills that were, 20 miles and you're still going up the hill.
Right.
but it never
as you go.
Yeah, it never overheated. It never got above the A of normal. It usually runs about the R and the M, between the R and the M, and it got up to the A, so it got a little warmer, but it wasn't like real bad. And it's got the dual gas tanks on it, so, and a 50 gallon tank in the bed of it too. So it's got lots of gas. With a 460 big block, it needs that gas. You can actually watch the gas gauge drop when you're going up hills. So. It is consistent though. Like it gets 12 miles per gallon, unless you're going down a really long hill, it consistently gets that whether you got a load or not. When I pulled that camper up there, it got about 12 miles per gallon. So, I can't knock for it as far as that goes. I've always been a Dodge fan, but hey, the price is right, right? So So, you know, other than that, hey, there we go. Got Jason in here. Hey, Jason apparently has the same truck I have.
He used to have it. He said it said crappy gas mileage. And
yeah, I didn't get 6.5 with my trailer. I was getting about 11, just upper 11s, mid low 12s on with the trailer, and usually I get about upper 12s to low 13s. So I guess I lost a mile per gallon. But my truck's got the tranny cooler built into it, and it's got the, you know, it's got all the bells and whistles. So.
Okay.
It's a decent truck as far as that goes.
Were you able to work on the truck yourself?
What's that?
Were you able to work on the truck yourself?
Yes. Yeah, I can actually. It's not like the newer ones. It's a 1996. So, yeah, mine's got the 410 gear rear end in it too, but it's a 96. And, it's got the throttle body injection, and it does a decent job. It's not like the newer ones with like 16 trillion wires going everywhere, and you can't get the screwdriver down in there. You open the hood and you close it because you can't even figure out where the spark plugs are anymore. They got the wires go down under the motor somewhere, but it is nice to be able to work on it. I also have a 1970 F-250 with a 390 that. I got from my grandfather when he passed away. So I'm working on that one. Getting ready to start working on that one too. It's always handy to have a backup.
And you're going to give it to Eric?
He's going to have one of the trucks. With where our new property's at, there is a ridiculous quantity of elk up there. I mean, I can just tell you there's a ridiculous quantity and you won't even fathom it. I mean, you can go in the evening times, you drive. It is nothing right after the sun sets to see 60 or 80 elk in a mile on the road walking back and forth because they're stupid. So you got to come to a complete stop because a 2,000-pound elk will do a lot of damage to a vehicle. So, he'll be driving one of the trucks. I feel safer with him in that than, like, say, my Mazda. With all the aluminum parts on those cars. But, yeah, so going up to the property is always an interesting trip with the elk and which are almost as big as a moose. And
they're big animals.
Yeah, they are. I mean, that's a good thing because once we get up to the property, that's actually once a year we'll bag an elk and throw it up in the deep freeze, and 1,500 pounds of meat goes a long ways. So
well done.
There's a few other things that we learned out at the other properties, such as, irrigation and timers, because we started with no irrigation and then no timers. And then we found out that modified sine inverters have issues with electronics. I never knew this. None of the websites I'd ever been to talked about this. I'm going to give a quick plug for a website that's really awesome, and that's Northern Arizona Wind and Solar. Those people on there, I learned about half of what I learned on there. The other half I learned through blowing things up and reinstalling it. there's a lot of people on there. If you can get past the snootiness, you can't do that. They'll tell you, you can't do that. Well, why can't you do that? Well, because you can't. Because, that's not the right way to do it. And that's one of those things that, I preface my show in that. What I'm going to be telling people on my show is, it's how I did it. What worked for me. That may not work for you. It may work for you, it may not. You'll have, trial and error. I'm going to tell people how I did things. And as long as it's not anything that's like, life threatening, that's where I'm going to keep it at. If it's something like electronics and things like that, then I'll list the correct way and the way I did it, both of which are within specs. I try to, when it comes to electronics, you don't want to mess around too much. But when it comes to plumbing, I can tell you all kinds of strange things I've done, bizarre setups. And so, we didn't have any irrigation, so we got irrigation in, and then we didn't have timers. And we found out timers don't work on modified sine inverters, which is why I have a pure sine inverter now. No timers work. Your clocks, like your digital clocks, they don't work on modified sine inverters. You'll lose anywhere from 12 minutes to 2.5 hours a day.
Wow.
And yeah, and so I mean, this is all stuff that I learned out there in the middle of the desert. You know, and it's no good when you don't know this, and all of a sudden you hear the inverter alarm going off because you're low on electricity, and you're like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Why am I low on electricity? Nothing's running. You walk downstairs and the deep freeze is running because the timer on the deep freeze thinks that it's 8 o'clock in the morning. So these are all, you know, little things that I've learned. There's a lot of these that I'll go over, and you know, as I go along, I'm sure I'll remember more things that I made mistakes on and incorporate them into later shows. You know, the next show that I'm going to do is going to be on basically the my motto, which is, you know, which I've adopted, which is preparing today to survive the day after. And I was talking about that a little earlier. It's, you know, it's, to me, the day after isn't so much the day after the end of the world as we know it. It could be, but that's not what I prepare for. It's the day after you get unemployed, the day after a tornado goes through, the day after a hurricane, you know, the day after the grid goes down, the day after an economic collapse, whatever it may be. If you prepare for the little things like the tornadoes and the hurricanes and the grid down scenarios, then you're going to be pretty good when it comes to the other issues, the bigger issues. It's real hard to prepare for things like an EMP because, well, there's not a lot of there. You get a lot of conflicting information because honestly, no one really knows exactly how an EMP is going to affect electronics. You read one set website and it says, nope, any vehicle made after 1970 something, 73, I think, or something like that, is going to fry. And then you read some websites and it's like, no, some of the newer vehicles may work still. It just depends on where they're parked at and, you know, how big the EMP is. And then you actually read the statistical data from when Russia did their
experiments with it.
Yeah, they did their EMP testing back in the 1950s, 60s. And when they did, they found a lot of interesting things. Well, first off, the way they did there, which was Project K, they launched their missile. It was the early 1960s. They launched their missile at one of their towns. They didn't warn the town. They didn't do anything. They just launched it. They're like, hey, we're just going to launch this missile at this town. We're going to blow it up over it and see what happens. And they did.
Yes,
and the people in the town are all like, hey, there's no electricity. I mean, but what they found was that in the 1960s, they were still using 1940s and 50s technology on their military vehicles. And the wiring harnesses on those, now those are really robust vehicles. And the wiring harnesses on those vehicles burst into flames. So,
right.
You know, when I read these websites and they're like, well, you know, anything pre-1973 is going to be just fine. And I kind of half question that because, you know, it doesn't get much more robust than a 1950s Russian vehicle.
No.
So,
you're right.
So, you know, when it comes to things like that, it's really hard to prepare for. You know, you just kind of do what you're best and then hope that it works. You know, I do have backups. I have backup charge controllers and backup inverters in a steel trash can with metal tape around it, which supposedly, according to several of the websites that I've read and some of the YouTube videos that actually have videos showing the effectiveness of it, hopefully it should work. Plus, if they launch it in the middle of the country, I'm about 3/4 of the way out on the outside edge of it. So that's a bonus.
Yeah.
But
right,
you know,
hey buddy,
I kind of
fly here.
Okay. Yep.
Hey buddy,
yep, thanks for hopping
in. My battery's about to die out on me. So.
Yep. Thanks for hopping in there.
I'll
making
be listening.
Sure I wasn't failing too bad.
Hey, first shows are always the hardest. They'll get better. You'll
yep.
get a lot.
So,
and you'll get used to looking at the studio and knowing what to do and all that. Because I can
tell
right now, when you're reading the chat room, you stop
talking.
That's all I know. It's like,
I noticed that. I was thinking about that when I was early, and I was like, I should still talk.
Right.
But yeah, it's a learning process. You work this thing like a pro.
Well, that's because I've had two and a half years to play with it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and look up your first episode.
The first one I did was I just recorded it and uploaded it. The second one is when I went live. And you listen to Julie's show, her very first one, same thing. It's just a learning process, and you start to get used to it. You're going to do fine. Your show's going to do fine.
Well, the first 10 minutes of this show is going to be horrible because I'm like, I can't. Is anyone there?
And we're
going to
leave it.
That's horrible.
No. We're going to leave it because we're going to get more people that want to do shows here on Contra Radio Network.
I got you.
And
they're going to
want
to see this guy.
They can listen to yours, to Julie's, to my first live shows. So they get the confidence saying, okay, look, I can't get any worse than those three. So, don't worry. So, it's all right.
I got you. All right. Well, like I said, thanks for hopping in. I'm going to go over a couple of other things real quick, and then I'm probably going to cut this short in about 15 minutes or so.
That's
the first show. There was, it's basically I just wanted to introduce ourselves and kind of give an idea as to who we are, where we come from, our background, and what our goals are, and why we prep, and kind of like that. It's just kind of an overview. So
I know you'll be fine. I'll be here. I'll be listening in, bud. All right, we'll talk to you.
Yep. You have a great day. All right, so back to what I was saying is, if you prepare for the little things, when something big happens, you're way more ready for it. You're way more prepared for it, And I'm not saying that you'll handle it perfectly, but if you prepare for a power outage, and you prepare for a tornado and a hurricane, and you're prepared and you're ready for an issue where you may be without power for a week or two. Well, if the grid goes down because of an EMP or somebody bombs the 9 transformers that are capable of taking out our entire grid for 8 to 10 years, well, then you're going to be pretty well prepared for that as far as the first couple of weeks, which is going to be the hardest part anyway. So, if you prepare for the small things, when the big things happen, you'll be a lot better off. Not saying that you have to stop at the small things, but it's a good starting point, And then as you go forward, it's never too late to start prepping and preparing and unless it's actually the day after an event. And at that point, it's too late. And welcome guest 2384. So, it's an interesting prospect as far as that goes. The amount of preparing that you have to do and the amount of time that you spend preparing, it leads into how well you're going to do in an event. So, so that being said, when you get into prepping, you don't want the worst thing you can do when you start prepping is, and this is something that I did too, is get exasperated and freak out and go out and start buying just random stupid stuff. But on a side note, I have some really awesome survival knives with fishing gear in the handle. Not that there's any water in West Texas that I'm going to go fishing in anywhere near where I was living at, but hey, I had it, and that's just some of the things. There was all kinds of stuff I wasted money on. I'll get into that stuff as we come to the shows, but, the biggest thing is just don't get exasperated. Don't get freaked out. Stay calm. The worst thing you can do in any scenario, in any situation, is panic. Because when you start panicking, you stop thinking. And when you stop thinking, you're the first person to make a stupid mistake and have something bad happen. No matter what the situation, be it, a combat situation or an emergency situation or an event where the grid's down. You just freak out and you're no good to anybody, including yourself. So first thing you need to do is, take a big breath, assess your situation and see where you stand at, and then figure out what's going to be best for you as far as preparing. Hopefully, as we go forward, I can give some of the information that I have and share some of the information that I have, and it'll help people along. Hopefully, I can get the mistakes that I made out there so that other people don't necessarily make them, or if they do, they're not quite as bad. Such as planting a septic tank 3 times. That was horrible, digging through that stuff out there. But you know, it's the little things, and you got to keep a sense of humor too, because you know, otherwise it'll drive you nuts. So with that being said, I think I've covered just about everything. The goals, the why we prep, the issues that we had before, you know, to touch bases just a little bit more on our goals. We'll be retired sometime, we as a family will be as close to retired as we can get, sometime towards the end of next year. Now, that does not mean I won't be working. I'll still be working a part-time job, and I may be greeting you at Walmart when you walk in the door. But, you know, that being said, I don't need, the way it's going to be set up, I won't need to make, to work a full-time job to make my bills and still live comfortably. My entire monthly bills will be several hundred dollars. So, you know, it makes it easier to cover your bills if you lower them as much as possible. So, that being said, I think if anyone else has any questions in the chat room, I'll go ahead and end the show. The next show is going to be basically on the tagline, you know, preparing today to survive the day after. So that's going to be next Tuesday. I look forward to seeing everybody next week and passing off all kinds of awesome information with a little bit of humor mixed in there. So if no one else has any questions, we'll call this an evening. And you all have a wonderful night, and I look forward to getting to meet everybody and getting to form relationships with everybody as we go forward. Y'all have a wonderful evening, and talk to you later.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More. Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More.